Get Talent podcast.
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah, I think it's be a good one.
Well, you ready to get going?
I'm ready to get going.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent podcast. Danny, how you doing today?
Doing good today. How about you?
You know, I'm making it. I feel like I need this episode more than our listeners do. Yeah, you know, we had another recruiter on with you last time. And he sounded really good. And I was like, man, I gotta get back at this thing, you know? These guys are coming in. They're guesting. They're sounding better than me. I got to get back on here.
Right. Go wait for a week.
Track here, you know? Yeah. Everybody forgets about me, you know? Anyway, but yeah, what are we talking about today, Danny?
We're talking about getting a search back on track.
I love it. Getting back on track. So I love this. And I think this is one of the things that we focused on quite a bit in our practice. And one of the things, if I'm being honest, that we do, I think, better than anybody. Maybe we get off track better than anybody, but I think we get back on track better than anybody. And I think failures and bumps in the road and things are bound to happen. And it's how you respond to that adversity and how do you bounce back that really defines who you are. Danny, I want to ask you, why are we talking about this topic?
So yeah, this is like a topic that we talk about all the time. When I first started, I felt like we were really aligned on this. It was really just me and you doing the recruiting, you know, about handling things, you know, different challenges. And in an earlier episode, a Get Talent episode, it was called Love at First Candidate. And
love that episode. All-time great episode.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Sad,
I still listen to it.
And laughed, and cried.
Exactly. We're still going to continue on that theme with dating, but this is more on the relationship. So after that, you know, that initial dating phase, now you're in a committed relationship. But in our case, it's with our clients that we're recruiting for. So, you know, the matchmaker working with the person looking for the match, basically. So we want to talk about what happens once that honeymoon phase is over and when things start to get real.
You know, when things start to get real, that's interesting. Yeah, and they always do, right? I mean, you always start off and everybody, you know, loves one another and it's can't wait to partner, so excited to work with you.
Yep.
Because everything's super theoretical. And then the rubber meets the road and challenges arise and bumps in the road pop up. There's a lot of bumps that can pop up in a search because we're over here trying to get a candidate to buy into a client company and get them to not only come together and like both of each other, but also to navigate the negotiation part, the timing, the logistics. I mean, there's a million things that can go wrong. Danny, what are some of the challenges that can come up during a search, like in your history, in your experience?
Ben, there's a lot of challenges, right? I would think we have a really good process, I have to say, that we've put together. It's really a very smooth process. And for the most part, our clients tell us that, right? So it usually goes really well, but there's things that come up.
You've been doing this a decade. I'm sure you've seen some challenges in your
life. Oh, that is for sure. You know, I would say one thing that tends to happen or could happen is you take a brief or discovery call with the client. It sounds great, right? It's like, we understand what you're looking for, and we go out, and you don't always know what's going to happen when you go out to market. Sometimes you have an idea, right? But you really got to go out there and see what's going on. And sometimes we go out there and we discover that the profile that we discuss doesn't actually exist.
Mike Tyson said everyone's got a plan so they get punched in the mouth, right? So we take that job brief. We're like, yeah, okay, we got a plan. Then we go to market. Boom, we get punched in the mouth.
That happens, right? Another thing that we find happens is sometimes candidates don't show up for interviews. I mean, it hasn't happened to me too much since I've joined Glomo, to be honest. But in my decade of recruiting, it's happened. That can cause a lot of issues.
But it caused a lack of trust with the client company, right? They're like,
absolutely.
I saw we were going to be talking to Susie on Wednesday at 2 o'clock, and I'm sitting here for 10 minutes on the Zoom call, and Susie hasn't showed up. And now we're furiously texting Susie. Now Susie decides to ghost us, doesn't hit us back. We're just like,
right.
You know, Mrs. Hiring Manager, I'm really sorry about this. I don't know what happened. Susie was so excited about the role. Now Susie's like in the wind. You know?
That's definitely not an easy one. And then sometimes, which we definitely have some of these stories, is sometimes, you know, a candidate will go in for an interview and they'll do something on that interview that upsets the client.
This is my favorite one. We had an HR candidate go in for a job and they went in, they made a joke. And that was it.
That was it. That was.
I don't know what this joke was about. I don't know if it was like a dirty joke.
Right.
I don't know if it was a joke at the hiring manager's expense. I don't know if it was just... Danny, to be honest with you, all I can think about is what was the joke?
Yeah, we talked about this on a podcast. We had a candidate that did a Zoom call in a car. And I remember that the client was really upset about that. There was another one where there was music playing in the background. So we've had a few.
Yes. How do you handle that?
There's something called candidate control. And that's a concept that I was first taught when I started in recruitment. Basically, what the name implies is that you have control over the candidate. As recruiters, we're paid to qualify candidates. And our job is to limit these situations, these challenging situations, as much as possible through the qualifications and our process. But to say that we have control over another human being and their actions, to me, is very unrealistic, to be honest. I'm not a fan of the term. I'll tell you the truth. I never was.
If I'm being honest, I never liked this term.
Never liked it.
But I mean, it does feel like the expectation is there from our clients when a candidate, this one's been happening.
Yeah.
This happened more this year than it happened last year, but offers getting rejected. This happens a lot more than it used to happen.
We really didn't have any the first year, right?
And the client companies can get really irritated because they really want the candidate. And they kind of get miffed at us because, I mean, the candidate's gone, so they can't get mad at the candidate.
Right.
They just get mad at us. They're just like, I'm very disappointed. Like, they told me they wanted the job. They told me they'd take the offer. They told me, and then they didn't. And I don't know.
Exactly. And then they'll say, like, I should have done it myself.
Like, well, you could have, but it wouldn't have been much fun. You wouldn't have anybody commiserate or blame right now, frankly. So aren't you glad you hired us?
And we all do it. Let's be honest, right? It's easy to put the blame on someone.
Shoot the messenger, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's getting harder than it is before, this like candidate control concept. According to a recent survey done by HubSpot, it was found that only 3% of the people in the survey that they studied considered salespeople to be trustworthy.
Let me ask you, is there a less trustworthy vocation?
I don't think there is.
Like, how does that stack rank next to doctors, teachers, ice cream?
Or like crime, I don't know.
Criminals,
yeah.
Criminals.
So, and also, I mean, 55% they found of the customers no longer trust companies as much as they used to previously. So this is talking about today as opposed to, the way things used to go a number of years ago.
That's really interesting. So do you think that recruiters are viewed like salespeople? I mean, is that the connection?
I think so because, I once did a Google search. What are recruiters referred to as, or negative terms? And it said a used car salesman. And everyone refers to the used car salesman as, unfortunately, right, that person that you don't trust, that you think is just trying to get a deal out of you, is looking out for themselves. And I think, today people have a lot more information and knowledge, and they're a lot more savvy to certain, I think, techniques that salespeople used to use. And it's a lot harder to, quote unquote, control people and to kind of get them to do what you want them to do in general. So that whole concept today, I don't even know if there's things you can do to make that happen.
How do we do it the best way we can?
So, to talk about some context, I guess beforehand is, today, there was a research study done by Zipia.com, and they said that 91% of customers are willing to switch companies after just one bad customer service experience. So that's one experience, right? So, we can be working with a client and hire 8 people, and then that one experience, right, could just put that bad taste in their mouth. They make a bad joke and, whatever the case is, and then they're done. But I think what we do is the complete opposite. And I think this is why we're so successful, is because we're not scared to confront the issues head on that I believe most salespeople are, when it comes to handling these things.
You're 100% right there, right? Because most salespeople, if confronted with a bad situation, they will blame somebody else or they will rationalize the issue as not being that big of a deal, or they'll just avoid. And I've seen those. I've done those, if I'm being honest. I've done those. I've been a salesperson at some form or fashion in my career for, probably 18 years. I've done all those things. And I've learned the hard way that that's not the way you build trustworthy relationships. Danny, instead, what should we be doing?
When this happens, the first thing we do is we get on a call with the client, or we meet them in person if we're able to. We get all the key stakeholders together in the process, HR, potentially, hiring manager. And what we'll then do is go through the data we have, the work that we've done on the search, which is recorded in our database, in our system, our applicant tracking system. And that will give us kind of a picture of what we've done. And then from that data, we can analyze it and figure out what's going on. You know, there's so many things you can learn from that information.
Right. So in that case that you're describing there, you know, that would be a really good solve for the complaint that, you know, we're just not getting the candidates we want. We're just not getting the quality of candidates that we thought we were going to get. And we're kind of getting irritated by that. And you're sending us the wrong type of people. You know, that's a common critique for a recruitment firm, right? And it, to me, it indicates either we don't understand what they want. The job description's kind of different than the job brief. Maybe there's a discrepancy there. Maybe the candidates that they want are, you know, these unicorns, these purple squirrels out there that, that are too many different attributes conflated together into one person, and it's just not possible. But more often than not, what I found is it's a communication breakdown where we just didn't listen properly. And so the first thing, to your point, we pulled the data. So we might have 100, 200 candidates that we went through, and we could show the client these 200 candidates. And of those 200, we spoke to, of those 200, 30 were interested. So we spoke to them, and of those 30, we submitted 20. And of those 20, only 10 got interviewed. And of those 10, you know, this was the issues with them, right? And so you could show that it's also not from lack of trying, because I think a lot of times they feel like, hey, we're just sitting on our hands over here, not really doing anything. And so we can show them, here's the candidate pool that we've gone to. And then to your point, I think where you're going with this too, is that they can look at that in the aggregate and say, it looks like we're focusing on this type of sales experience, you know, software as a service experience, when in actuality, we need to focus more on a high touch relationship kind of experience.
Yeah.
Or we're looking for people that have more of a relationship background and are used to selling enterprise solutions, not just selling transactional products. So I think that's a really helpful way to do it.
I agree. And sometimes on those calls, like as we're going through that or talking it through on the spot, they'll maybe realize something that they didn't communicate or that they didn't even realize they wanted. And it's really interesting to see. And then we kind of work through it together. The next point is, and how we kind of approach this more from a mindset standpoint, is something that we talked about when I joined earlier on, this concept of radical accountability.
I love the concept. What does that mean?
The concept is basically that you're 100% responsible for your life and the outcomes you experience, regardless of external factors. So while we said earlier, it's not necessarily anyone's fault that these things happen. Obviously, we take a lot of that ownership. And the best thing we can do is really take full responsibility. Taking that responsibility helps us move forward and help the client solve this problem in the best way possible.
I love this concept of radical accountability. It's like, even when it's not your fault, it's your fault. That's kind of the premise of it. Even when it's not your fault, it's your fault. Even if 90% of it was they said they wanted one thing and they actually wanted another, they changed their requirements. Now it's in person, you know, like no matter what it is, it's always your fault. And the reason why it's always your fault, two things. One is you can only control what you can control. Right. So the fault of others doesn't really matter because you can't fix that.
Right.
So focus on the 10% that's under your control and control that. By you taking ownership, you create an ownership paradigm in a relationship where now the other party, then you signal to the other party that it's okay to be accountable and take responsibility. And hopefully, in a quality relationship, they'll start to take ownership of their part too.
Yeah.
Right? Because what happens is, I believe you get what you give. So if you give finger pointing, you get finger pointing. If you give accountability and if you give ownership, then that's what you'll receive from the other party as well. That's it. And we try to learn from everything. And everything is an opportunity to get better. It's one of our mantras. We just got better is really our call to action.
I agree. And you still follow that process regardless. And if something happens, you can't control that, right? It's like playing poker. You got to play the hands you're supposed to play and make those moves. And you can't always control the outcome. But you still have to do those things and do everything you can. And
You can't control the outcome, but you can give yourself the best odds to be
successful. Exactly. So it's such a good advice for just like life in general, all your relationships, right? And I would say, you know, the final thing is once we have that conversation, we kind of just diagnose the problem through the data, talk it through, and we come to an agreement on what we're going to do moving forward, both on our part and their part. Kind of a mutual agreement on how we're going to get things back on track. We might get a new job brief, potentially. We might be given a permission to seek out other types of candidates tweak the requirement. That's really how we sort of finalize
them. Let's give some real world examples, because I think all these sometimes, like, I think stories are better, right? So we had a situation with a client. They were kind of going down a new line of business. And this is usually a red flag that this stuff could pop up.
Yeah.
The new line of business, it's a job that's been created, it's a new role, right? Or it's a role that a lot of people have been unsuccessful in the past. These are red flag situations in our mind. But anyway, despite red flags, we persist, okay? Because that's how we're built, all right? So anyway, so we're going down this path and it's like, don't enter. No, we're going to go right down that path. So somebody created a new role for a new line of business, two red flags. Okay, great. And so we place the person and they show up and during training, they get fired 2 days into training. Needless to say, we're devastated. We're like, oh, I can't believe it. Oh, I'm so excited. Because we go from being up here. Oh, I'm so excited. We nailed it. They started. Yeah. High five. To like, they got canned. Oh my gosh. That's terrible. You know? And now the client went behind us and hired their own person. Because we guarantee our work. So we said, we're going to replace that person. But they went and they hired their own person. Talk about a sticky wicket. So we ended up getting on the call with the owner of the company, talking it through, saying, what do you think is fair and equitable? To your point earlier, they came up, they said, you know what? This job's already filled, but you know, we're retained with them, right? They have a retainer with us, right? But here's this job search that you can fill for us. Turned out to be another job, a higher level business development job. We nailed that search in a way that was so much more of a thoroughly accurate fit than even the first one was. We nailed it. Perfect culture fit, perfect experience, perfect salary range. I mean, just absolutely home run. I think that's just one example. Because in that moment, after this all went south, we're feeling like, you're feeling low. They're not happy. I mean, but honestly, like Danny, like, you know, you, me, we were accountable to that. We learned from it. And I think they really respected the fact we didn't just leave them hanging.
You know what? And I think at the end of the call, you know, I spoke with them, with their HR manager, who's great. And she said, you know, we decided to hire that person. So, you know, we take responsibility for that too. You know, it's very rare that you hear that.
What's another situation, Danny? Let's tell some more stories here. What's another situation that happened?
For sure. You know, we had a situation where it was actually, you know, I'd say a somewhat of a new vertical for us. You know, we were trying to expand out and, you know, we went out and did the search. We took the requirements, went out and we discovered, you know, on that search that the persona of this candidate was a lot different than we were used to, number one. And number two, there was a misunderstanding on how to pitch this role to these candidates. What ended up happening is we were, you know, speaking with a lot of these people and they weren't getting interested in the role. And
yeah, we were probably explaining it wrong to some extent, really.
Exactly. We really were. And, you know,
they kind of honed in. What'll happen a lot of times, we hone in on the wrong keywords.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And we start pitching it as this thing when it's really
kind
of that thing, but it's called this thing over here.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes the first thing to do is, hey, it's not my fault. You know, the client told me this is what they wanted. But we do radical accountability and we say, wait a minute, should have challenged that, should have asked that question on what do they mean by that specific thing that they're looking for? What could we have done that's within our control that we won't do next time? And we got on a call with the client and we actually uncovered and we've got a new role that, you know, they found that they actually realized they need more than the one that they wanted to hire.
Yeah. The more we talked about it, they were like, well, this thing that we still want, but this other thing that you're talking about, you've done for your clients in the past, that right there, that transformational business development role, that's even more appealing to us. But here's the thing, I give the client so much credit because they also showed up. Because we can show up all we want. We say, let's get on a call. But they respected us enough. And this is like, shout out to all the client companies out there that work with recruiters, because this is so important. And to all the recruiters out there, you need to find clients that do this, that respect you enough to get on the call on a weekly or, you know, twice a month basis or whatever, check in on the search and give you feedback, because they respected us enough to keep showing up and giving us the feedback. So we started seeing the way they were evaluating these candidates. And that also really helps to calibrate our understanding, right? These processes are not easy. It is painful to get on a call with someone when you know that you're not nailing it for them.
It's the worst.
Yeah. It's the worst.
It's the worst feeling. It's the worst
feeling. But putting ourselves in that position and being uncomfortable and embracing that uncomfortability, I think is what makes us really excellent.
You know,
and I give you the most credit, Danny, for that, honestly, because you do that better than anybody I know. Like, how would this same situation go maybe 7 years ago as you were early in your career? You know, what were some of the things that maybe you would have done instead?
It's a great question. Embarrassed to say, I had something similar, and I did not call the client back after it happened. I was so embarrassed and mortified that I didn't even call the client back. And I felt horrible about it. I was scared, you know, and that was one thing I did for sure.
I've had clients where, you know, you screw up and you just know that you screwed up and maybe it's like the third time.
Yeah.
I screwed up.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I just don't got it in me to go look these people in the eye anymore.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. And I think honestly, that's where you've made me better and I've made you better. And we make Absolutely. Our team better because we, to some degree, kind of hold each other accountable to do that, right?
Yeah.
And we do it arm in arm too. We go on the calls together, you know?
Yeah.
Or if you're like, hey, they need another voice, you call them, or vice versa, right? And
yeah,
and we do that for one another as well too. So
yeah, 100%.
I think it's important to have that team. You know, that's another thing. A lot of recruiters operate kind of as a solopreneur, as a solo practitioner.
Yeah.
And I think when they're out there as a solo practitioner, they lose some of that coaching, accountability, support, right? From having someone like kind of like shoulder to shoulder with them in the process. I think that my advice to companies that are out there that are looking for recruiters, I mean, my advice has always been to look in your niche and specialism first and foremost, to look for people who demonstrate the accountability and the willingness to like get on a call on a weekly basis and are going to see the search through to the end, who are engaged on that search versus just a firm that you give it to and they just have 100 open jobs and they just stick it on a job board or a newsletter or whatever. The third thing is really that they have a support structure in place. There's more than one person working on these things. And, you know, I mean, that comes into play, say, if they're on vacation, or it comes into play if something goes sideways, or if they need to put a rush on something and need two eyes on instead of one. You know, we have people working in different time zones. We have people working in Asia, you know, so there's kind of around the clock as well, you know, which I think also speeds things up. So just looking for that kind of that infrastructure, I'd say would be the third piece of advice.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, working with other people, you talk it through. And you hear the mistakes that they've made, and it makes you feel better too, because obviously misery likes company, but also because you're exchanging, and it's really, really good.
Yeah. So I think if I were to, I mean, this is a great topic, Danny. Somebody once told me in the moving business, which is where I came from, they said, if you want to end up on the right foot, you got to start off on the right foot. And when we talk about getting things back on track with the search, the number one piece of advice I can give people is don't let it get off track.
Yeah.
And the number one way to make sure it doesn't get off track is to start with a job description, a job brief call, and then a 1 week call to make sure that the candidates that you're sending in are good. And if they're like 70% matches, well, what's the other 30%? What's the 70? What do you like? Because I guarantee you that second round of candidates on the week two call, and yes, you should be meeting every week with your recruiter and your client together to talk about the search, and be wary of any recruiter that doesn't want to sign up for a call every week, because they're not actually working your search.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So you need to have that cadence in place. Job description, job brief call, 1 week check-in call, and each subsequent week calls. Those are the three things that I would say you have to have in order to make sure that the search stays on track.
Every time we followed that, to be honest, it works. And when we lose that, it sometimes doesn't. So great advice.
And it's a little annoying to like sign up for like a weekly call, especially in the beginning. I know our clients, right? They're like, they give us the job description. They feel like their job is done. It's your problem now.
Right.
But it's
right.
Like, if you want the quality of the product to be really good, commit to the call. Give us three feedback calls and you will guarantee you have the candidate.
Yeah. Great stuff. I love this, this topic.
Really great. I hope this helped everybody out there in recruiting land. If you're an internal recruiter, if you're a hiring manager, if you're an owner of a company and you need help with recruiting, please hit us up. We would love to talk to you about it. If we can help, we will. If we can refer somebody who's maybe more suited to help, that's cool too. Connect with Danny Herskowitz and myself, Ben Cross, online, and we look forward to hearing from you. If you got any other topics too, you know, let us know. We might even start having some guests on the show too. We got a famous recruiting personality who's going to be on with us soon. Danny, you want to tease that one? Who do you guys look forward to?
Super excited. We're going to get actually one of the, I would say, the biggest podcasts in recruiting today. We're going to be having that person on the show with us.
The foremost thought leader in recruitment, to my knowledge, in the business today. I mean, this person is literally giving the keynote at the Pinnacle Society, which is the top 80 recruiters in the world. You know, this person is the person.
He's had everyone on there. Yeah, the best. He's James Caan.
James Caan, right? Right. Who's famous, especially in the UK. He's on the Dragon's Den, which is the Shark Tank over there. I've also been on his show before in Scotland.
That's right.
Bonnie Scott.
That's right. That's
well, his first in person. We flew all the way out there to Scotland to be with him.
That was great.
Can I tell people who it is, Danny?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Thank you. Mark Whitby is going to be on the show from the host of the Resilient Recruiter podcast. Mark coaches recruiters. He's also been a recruiter, and he's the best. So he'll be on, and I really look forward to that. That one's going to be a special one, Danny.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited.
All right, everybody, hit that subscribe button. Please leave us a review. 5 stars. Appreciate y'all. Thanks for tuning in to the Get Talent podcast. Appreciate you, Danny.
You too.